Good morning, everyone. This is Sierra Dahl with Municipal Sustainability and Energy Forum. And today we're talking about blockchain as it relates to renewable energy. Our presenters today are Roger Wilkins with Upgrade Athens County, Gene Oakland with Microgrid Energy, and Baird Brown with Brinker, Biddle, and Reese. So, Roger, why don't you go ahead and start us out?
Okay. Well, I've been working here in Southeast Ohio for the past half dozen years with a variety of renewable energy projects, and one of the most recent one in the past couple of years has been the Athens Energy Institute. And through our studies of how renewable energy and distributed production is spreading throughout the country, we came across some interesting projects using blockchain. And so I've pursued that pretty diligently for about a half year now and come to realize that it's not only in the energy industry, but throughout our economy, that blockchain is starting to have a profound impact. And what it is offering is a secure internet of transactions. We've had the internet of communication for several decades now, but its security has been terrible. There's identity theft and secure information theft all over the place. And blockchain has been developed first as the underpinning for cryptocurrencies, but now it is finding application in much broader areas. It's basically a distributed ledger technology that uses cryptography to secure the information. One of the main companies, Ethereum, has built on this and created smart contracts. And different companies are using these, particularly, well, in the energy sector as well as other places. And recently, in the past year or so, IBM has taken a great interest in developing the enterprise-level technology. The Rocky Mountain Institute has launched the Energy Web Foundation, which is specifically applying blockchain to the energy sector. And we and Rocky Mountain and others are looking particularly at the Brooklyn microgrid, which is using blockchain technology for peer-to-peer renewable energy transactions. And it's an exciting new project. So that's my intro.
All right. Gene, why don't you go ahead and talk a little bit about what you know about this?
Sure. Good morning. Thank you, Sierra. So a little about my background. I've been in the energy space for about 18 to 20 years, mostly developing renewable energy projects in California and other parts of the world. Most recently, I have been doing a lot more research on the community solar projects and projects that relate to how we can increase the adoption of solar potentially through blockchains. And so Microgrid Energy's interest in blockchain is relative to how we can best use that technology to advance the commercial energy power purchasing by users that cannot ordinarily purchase power or take advantage of renewable energy, as they either don't have a site that's favorable to renewable energy or in many instances don't own the facilities they are operating in, yet would like to participate in purchasing green power from providers. And blockchain makes that, I believe, the blockchain the technology holds the answers for this and many other interesting scenarios related to buying and selling energy and carbon credits in a transparent and low-risk type scenario, I think, that would lead to greater adoption of purchasing this type of power and having this type of a credit. I think the blockchain, I think the integrating the blockchain technology seamlessly into other platforms and apps is going to yield a whole new group of developers and funders that are going to be focused on the platforms based on the blockchain technology and their security benefits. Which was previously stated, I think security is probably one of the biggest biggest parts of the peer-to-peer trading overhaul system. And I think by opening it up to the market, allowing households to buy energy and sell energy without a power company, and trading energy for more than feed-in tariff while still undercutting power providers for buyers is a very interesting scenario in certain countries. So I think more than that, what was already stated is that the blockchain is turning the currency and commodity into digital form. I think we kind of know a little bit about that, and that we all know what Bitcoin is, and Ethereum was already discussed. I do think there's a lot of startup companies now all around the world that are starting to look at this. In Australia, there's one called Power Ledger. In Africa, Sun Exchange. In the UK, we have Energy Mine, Solar Coin, Solar Change, Solar Crypto. And I have a very large interest in how the Brooklyn Microgrid is operating, because I think that may be a very good model as well for other parts of the world. I'm doing some work in Asia, and in Thailand, I could tell you that they're interested in the Brooklyn microgrid and how that operates. So I do believe that a lot of these countries that have a very old grid, including the U.S. grid, once they get a hold of how the blockchain technology will affect the grid, you tie that with the microgrid technologies, and I think that there's a very interesting situation that could occur in terms of a transformation of the grid and how people buy power. And so it's very interesting this time right now. That's about all I have at the moment on blockchain.
All right, Baird.
Sure. Well, this is going to be a Brooklyn microgrid heavy presentation. I represent LO3 in connection with the regulatory strategy for the Brooklyn microgrid project. And what the Brooklyn microgrid project is a peer-to-peer market, so that a bunch of folks with solar on their roofs in Brooklyn can sell their excess power instead of being on a net metering tariff with the with their local utility, can sell their excess solar power to their neighbors, basically. And that is all implemented through a blockchain process that is basically the software is installed in the smart meter for each of the participants, both the folks who do have solar on their roof and the folks who don't. So they have their own independent communication of meter data that supports the market, not relying on the local utilities metering. But as folks on the call may be aware, energy sales and transactions and transmission and delivery are among the most highly regulated activities in the known universe. And so figuring out how to allow those transactions to happen. I mean, the principle is simple. Each consumer, the people who want to buy power, basically set up a standing bid such that they're willing to buy at certain prices at certain times. And the prosumers, that's the people with their own solar with excess to sell, simply deliver the excess, and the excess is allocated by the transactional technology to the folks based on their bids. And so that allocation is captured by the blockchain in the form of quantities and prices that transacted that have the quality of being secure and untamperable. They're permanently etched in electronic stone. So without getting into the technology deeply, so you've got people with solar on their roofs selling, and you've got people with no solar on their roofs, or maybe, buying. And the question is, who's allowed to do that? And what we, to make a long story short, the people with solar on their roofs sell to Brooklyn Microgrid. That's a wholesale sale under the power laws. It's under federal jurisdiction, not state jurisdiction, and the sale is and these small solar arrays are qualifying facilities under the Public Utility Regulatory Policies Act, and so they don't they do a self-certification. They don't have to have to be worried about whether they have market power. They get market-based rates, so they can basically sell the power at market to Brooklyn Microgrid. Brooklyn Microgrid, in turn, becomes a registered ESCO, what New York calls a retail power supplier, is an energy service company, or ESCO, even though that means something else in most jurisdictions. So they're entitled to sell retail power to all the consumers, and so they act as the middleman in the transaction. They don't actually take a financial stake in the transaction legally, but they basically facilitate the transaction from a regulatory point of view. And so all those transactions occur basically over the local utilities wires. In other words, one of the things that being a retail electric supplier allows you to do in the states where that is a possible regulatory status is to deliver power to retail customers over the utilities wires, and then the utility, in fact, bills for the power that's delivered. So, there's a whole mechanism for a partnership with the utility that you don't have to work out separately. And the final piece of that is that being an ESCO, you have to provide the entire power requirements of the customers who are your customers. And they have a separate agreement with a usual marketer that's willing to supply the balancing power. And then Brooklyn Microgrid just provides the actual transaction amounts for the month to the utility at the end of the month, and the utility sends their regular bills. So the whole thing fits within the traditional regulatory scheme. And I can the one other thing I'll mention is that this has just infinite possible applications, and one of the places we've been working on it is point of sale carbon neutrality purchases, so that with a blockchain you can click when you buy something and it actually ends up moving entitlements to carbon credits on official registries and retiring them and so forth and so on. So there's just the ways this can ramify through the energy environment are just stunning.
All right. So why don't you go ahead and ask each other questions if you have any, and after that we'll open it up to other people.
Baird, that's a wealth of information. Thanks for that. One of the questions I have is when we talk about the security and being able to kind of change the way things are being done relative to the amount of paperwork and legal, is there anything that you can take away from this in terms of reduction in the soft costs and legal fees and all the processing of those transactions through something like using blockchain in this scenario?
Well, Roger may want to comment as well, but you can reduce transaction costs immediately. There's a lot of talk about e-contracts, but if you think about how energy trading happens now in the sort of big energy world, people enter into EEI contracts or other form contracts. They may negotiate them once up front, but then they trade on confirms, which are produced by either an email chain or even just a telephone chain. And the blockchain basically provides the confirm, and the underlying contract is something that you enter into once up front. Think if you're talking about Amazon, for example, you sign up for one-click shopping, you sign up a contract, and then when you do your one-click, that contract applies. And the same thing happens in all these contexts. You have one simple contract, and the rest of the mechanism operates automatically through the blockchain.
Yeah, I mean, it would seem to me it would make it a lot more efficient, because right now you're having to go through the whole process and paperwork of, even with the carbon credits, going through that of setting up the contract and taking those credits and retiring those and doing that from the top to the end. I would think that also would reduce a great amount of just clean up the whole data stream and make it very fast and easy to make that transaction all the way through, including all the different components that have to go with it. So it's very interesting to me. I also had a question related to the, on the Brooklyn Microgrid, they're now the ESCO or the provider. They're selling the power to the consumers, and utilities is billing that. I mean, are the utilities okay with this, or how are they taking this type of change to their model? And it's more work for them on the billing side, or is it just a matter of technology movement typically?
Well, New York already has retail electric choice. So utilities already required, if somebody selects an alternative energy supplier, to perform that back office billing function. As it is in the roughly 19 states now that have retail choice. So in that sense, the utility is fairly indifferent. It's something they're already doing. And in this case, the New York Public Service Commission was excited about the experiment and told the utility they ought to be excited about it too. That helps.
Yeah, okay, they forced them into that one. That does help. Say was the biggest challenge to implementing the Brooklyn microgrid relative to regulatory or otherwise?
I really pretty much ran through that. I mean, there's a lot of other challenges that I didn't try to talk about, but I mean, there's, when you get into, people are thinking about using this for RTO settlements or, CalISO settlements. If you do that, you're in a big time commodity trading world, and there's other regulatory schemes that apply. You might end up being an electronic exchange under the subject of the jurisdiction of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. There's all kinds of things to think through as you try and apply this in other areas.
Thank you.
Let me jump in here. This is Roger. Yeah. I'll mention that the whole carbon trading scenario is one of the use cases that the Rocky Mountain Institute and this Energy Web Foundation is addressing. And so I think they're far enough along with their work and analysis that they might have some real figures on what it can save, but it looks like there are a lot of intermediary costs that are eliminated from this, as well as the lot of confusion and the possibility of fraud and other things are eliminated. So I would encourage you to take a look at what the Energy Web Foundation is doing in that regard. And I live in Ohio. We're also deregulated, and I'm immediately turning my mind once again to whether we could bend our regulatory scheme to support this, as I know that New York is at the forefront with its REV program, but Ohio is going through a grid modernization process right now and really looking at updating our whole regulatory structure. And I, in fact, have suggested to our Public Utilities Commission that they look at the Brooklyn microgrid and this kind of peer-to-peer trading scheme. But I don't know if they're going to take it on or not. Baird, I was wondering, do you have a sense of how easy it might be in other deregulated states to implement this?
Well, I think in principle the same analysis applies, where you've got a, in any deregulated state where you've already got a requirement that the utility act as the delivery system for third-party electric suppliers. You know, they're bound to be, and I have not happened to have a reason to look at Ohio's specific wrinkles in the regulatory scheme, but I would imagine that as a general matter, the answer would be yes, you could do it. You know, one of the small questions, but possibly thorny, is the interconnection process for the solar providers. New York has a net metering interconnection standard. It doesn't really have an interconnection standard for really tiny generators that are actually selling at wholesale.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, again, that was where having the Public Service Commission be enthusiastic was helpful. But so there may be wrinkles like that, but in principle, I think it's not, it ought mm-hmm. to be doable in any retail choice state.
Thank you.
Okay. We can open this up to other questions right now, so hang on 1 second and I'll unmute the audience. And if anybody has a question, go ahead. Please introduce yourself. And Mark Pruitt, good to see you. Let me tell a few of the people that are on the group right now, or in the group. Ronald Larson is here today. Michelle Halsell from Pennsylvania State University. Sherry Gruder from University of Wisconsin. And Stephen Schwartz is here from Advisian. Mark Pruitt, whom I haven't seen for a long time. Welcome back, Mark. The Power Bureau from Indiana, and he works with CCAs over there. David Kay from, I don't know why I always space out, Cornell University, of course. Richard Ball is from the Sierra Club, and Jerry Braun from Integrated Resources Network. So please introduce yourself first if you have a question, and go ahead. I can't believe nobody has a question. Really? Jerry, you're always good for questions.
I thought it was a very good explanation, and I'm if I asked a question, I'd get some additional detail. I'm just processing the top-level information.
This is Mark Pruitt. I have a question.
Sure.
And thank you for your presentation. It's very, very informative. I'm interested in your views on how the blockchain and smart contracts can serve as perhaps the financing vehicle for the development of new projects, especially solar or perhaps even storage or other types of distributed resources, perhaps even demand response for broader populations of smaller consumers. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I'll jump in here. This is Roger again. That's something I've been looking at closely in the past month, and there are just a spate of new, what are called initial coin offerings. That's the financing mechanism that you can do under smart contracts. And companies, both in the energy sector and outside, are putting together projects or products and then doing initial coin offerings, which my understanding is they are not ownership in the project, but tokens that can be traded for goods or services when the product or project comes online. And some of these are really interesting and exciting projects that are well researched and have a good business plan. Others are a wild idea that someone has. And so I'm actually seeing some cautionary publications from Ethereum Foundation and from other groups saying that these ICOs need to be well-grounded and well-formulated. But my impression is that they provide potentially sort of the next generation of funding for renewable energy projects, and particularly small-scale ones, if they're done well. And it's, I think we're going to see a great deal of growth in this area very soon. We're already seeing it. So I think it's something to be aware of and know more about.
Yeah, this is Baird Brown. Let me give a sort of a more traditional finance perspective. You know, there's, you know, in traditional project finance, we like to have one big long-term contract, or maybe five or six or something, but that you can, you know, put or pay contract, and somebody's going to pay for something over a long period of time that's consistent with the term of the financing. The alternative that that sometimes gets used is some, you know, like when you finance a toll road or something, is you have a concession agreement and you have the ability to charge tolls and collect them, and, you know, basically the public body that owns the right-of-way leases you the toll road for 50 years. And there's much less certainty about what the revenues are going to be, but usually you get an independent engineer to come in and say, yes, this is how the world is likely to work, and this is what the projected revenues are, and if the coverage ratio is enough, it supports a financing. This was not a blockchain deal, but we've recently structured a microgrid project in Washington, D.C., where we have a concession agreement, and a microgrid developer is going to be the sole supplier of electricity, hot water, and chilled water to an entire 66-acre development. So that kind of concession agreement would definitely typically be able to support a financing, especially where, you know, you have some assurances about what's going to be built out in terms of a community. Whether the nice thing about the blockchain, as has been pointed out, is it can really reduce transaction costs. So to the extent that it helps you assemble that kind of a concessionary model where there's a lot of transactions that you can be reasonably certain will occur, then I think there definitely are ways forward there.
This is Sherry Gruder from Wisconsin. Wisconsin is a regulated state. I'm wondering if there might be any legal, if there would be a way, if we have a progressive utility that would want to use the blockchain type of sales trading, if that could be done, not, I realize it's regulated federally, not on a state basis, but we're in a regulated state. Would there be a way, do you think, creatively, that one utility might do that with their customers?
Well, I think there would be no regulatory difficulty in a utility that wanted to do it. The ones that come to mind would be municipals or co-ops who might want to do that as they're forward-thinking and customer-supporting. You might get a utility who wants to try it and if what they're doing is basically owning the they can buy power from whoever they want, so the wholesale sale of solar or wind or whatever to a utility is not problematic on a regulatory basis. If what they wanted to do then was have a special tariff so that their customers could take advantage of that, certainly utilities have done that sort of thing in other states. I mean, just sort of saying you want to buy all solar, we'll have a special tariff for buying all solar. So they, in principle, they could do it.
Hmm. And do you know what other states where that might have occurred? Do you have any particular one utility that I might contact?
No, I don't really. Utilities are slowly dipping their toe in this stuff. Exelon is probably pushing forward on microgrids a fair amount, and especially ComEd in Chicago is thinking hard about being the utility of the future. Ann Premajor is the president there and the CEO, and she's one of the forward-thinking people in the utility world. There are certainly places like SMUD in California, this Sacramento Municipal Utility District, which is a huge municipal utility that has been fairly forward-thinking in working with their customers on energy efficiency and so forth. So there are folks, and it's it would be a question of finding somebody who has the interest in exploring it with them.
Great, thank you.
Mayor, this is Gene. Just one question. Do you think community choice aggregators would be well positioned for this technology?
Yes, I do. For people who don't know what your community choice aggregation is, it's like retail electric choice, only run by municipalities. So in five states or six states, I've forgotten, but California is one of them, and Illinois is another, and there's a couple on the East Coast. A municipality can basically, again, use the utility's wires, but be the buyer for power for their entire community. And usually the one difference is that instead of having to sign everybody up, all the members of the community are automatically in unless they opt out. So it makes it easier to form things. One of the things that I'm interested in but don't know much about yet is to what extent community choice aggregation can do included microgrids that provide a different level of service to some customers than others. I think that may be complicated, but it may be possible. But here, I mean, if you really are just doing a community-wide market, there wouldn't be any reason you couldn't.
Mark, do you have any comments on that?
I think that what you say is on target. The difference is going to be in with regard to term. Municipal aggregation or community aggregation in some states like Illinois and perhaps Ohio tend to focus on shorter year-to-year contracts, whereas CCA in California has a much longer horizon because, as I understand it, the municipality itself is the actual transacting body as opposed to merely serving as a brokering or agent capacity, such as in Illinois or Ohio. But I'm intrigued that, you know, it might not be this might be something that works on an opt-in basis where the municipality facilitates these blockchain or ICO-type transactions for volunteers within the community and doesn't necessarily obligate all the community members to the transaction, political considerations being kind of the limiting factor there. But it's something I've been thinking about, and one of the reasons I was very interested in today's presentation.
Sierra, this is Jerry. May I butt in here a little bit?
Oh, sure. Go ahead, Jerry.
The questions that we've just been discussing are ones that were kind of half-formed in my mind. I was interested in how CCAs could engage, and I agree that CCA is not a term that applies. it might apply generally, but California is quite different. I just want to correct one impression about how things work. In California, typical CCAs are joint powers agencies. The municipalities, the elected officials, sit on the JPA's board, but one of the issues, I think, for the California CCAs is, you know, are the municipalities going to be active, or are they simply outsourcing this to, an entity that, is basically a wholesale power entity? That's not decided yet. That, you know, there's some movement in one of the CCAs, at least, toward kind of putting a toe in the water regarding microgrids. But I think the question I would have for the experts is how could actually, without the CCA framework, how could municipalities facilitate this? Because one of the things I'm particularly interested in is the ways that municipalities and the grid owners really have a lot. They need each other as the grid decentralizes and as local generation starts to predominate. And most of them are simply not aware that, that connection needs to be made. But how do you see that municipalities could, take a role in facilitating this? Is it just education, or is it something more more proactive than that?
Well, this is Baird. One of the entities I represent is something called the Delaware Sustainable Energy Utility. It's in a way, it's sort of like a joint powers authority. It's a nonprofit that was formed by Delaware law, and Delaware, Delaware's about 800,000 souls. It's much smaller than some cities in California, and basically, it has the mission to bring renewable energy and energy efficiency to the entire Delaware economy. And it does that, among other things, by running finance programs for people to do pooled energy efficiency finance. It runs the SREC auction in Delaware. It plays a bunch of different roles. There's more than just education. There's sort of aggregation and facilitating finance and acting as a trusted advisor or bringing people in to act as a trusted advisor. A lot of the resistance in this space isn't about finance, not being able to get finance and things like that, so much as it's about people not yet having the competence or the confidence to transact in new space where they don't fully understand what's going on, and having folks that really pave the way is extraordinarily helpful. But they can also play a strong role in organizing financing and sort of making deals happen. And we can talk more offline about that if you'd like.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
This is Roger. I'll jump in a little bit on this. I, a few years ago, helped organize a CCA here in Southeast Ohio and served as executive director for its first couple of years, the Southeast Ohio Public Energy Council. And we started out with not only the goal of aggregating and bulk purchase of power, but also of building our own local renewable energy production, either microgrid or solar farm. And that is an ongoing aspect of it. The wholesale purchase and distribution has been much easier to accomplish. But I still think that CCAs, at least as they're structured in Ohio, can be a very good framework for bringing this kind of blockchain peer-to-peer trading among very small producers, which we have a lot of, and consumers. And so I think we're going to see that develop and some test cases. And currently, I think that there have been some changes in the Ohio regulatory structure that will make that a little bit easier to happen. Previously, if you were a net metering customer, you could only net meter with the utility. You could not be with CCA or any other competitive producer in Ohio. But that has very recently changed, and I think it may start to open that door.
This is fair. The other thing for people to sort of be aware of is that in addition to retail choice states or community choice aggregation states, there are state by state, and you just have to look, opportunities to do creative things within the scope of the law. So New York's law governing qualifying facilities, which is to say renewable energy and cogeneration, allows you to sell to people kind of within the vicinity of the power plant. In California, the electric co-op law is sufficiently flexible that you could take six buildings in a city block and make a little co-op and, just make a microgrid. So there are, I wouldn't try this in Kansas. I'm not sure there's any loopholes there at all, but many places there are ways to proceed.
We have one person here who I don't know who that is. Is that you, Evan?
I'm here on Skype, yes.
Okay, there you go. Sorry, Evan, you joined the group. Go ahead.
This is Jerry again. I wanted to also ask the question about how important it is to have the foundation of a lot of rooftop solar, for example, happening in the area. We happen to be where I am. I think we're have the second highest per capita rooftop solar in the country, and we are actually expanding. We're going to double that within the next couple of years. So when you have that much to work with, it's kind of a natural to figure out how you can do the aggregation. Are you thinking about targeting those areas that have high penetrations of already have high penetrations of local local supply?
Well, this is Baird. I'm just a lawyer, and so the client has to decide that they want to do it. But if I was the client, that's exactly what I'd be doing. And and I don't know whether you're in California or Nevada or Arizona, which are the or Hawaii. Those are the places that are really leading the world on solar. There's some incredibly interesting opportunities. California is struggling with what they call the duck curve, where there's too much solar on at the middle of the day and prices drop, and then at 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening, you know, there's this incredible ramp where they have to start finding more generation. The opportunity for either battery storage or even thermal storage to, on an aggregate basis, to move those peaks to when the power is really needed, there's an incredible arbitrage opportunity, and
yeah.
You know, doing that collectively rather than individually is exactly what I'd be doing.
Well, we are in California, Davis, in fact. And I think that, you know, kind of the energy, the other thing is energy storage. I think that California is kind of leading the charge on deploying energy storage, partly because of the duck curve. And, you know, I think to the extent that, you have all of the on-site solar, you're going to have a lot of on-site storage. So I think that enhances the opportunity. You know, the platform needs the solar and storage to work well. And so that's why I brought the point up.
Well, let me make a pitch to the Californians for district cooling or any place that where there's a large cooling load. It's way cheaper, more efficient from an energy point of view to take that excess power in the middle of the day and use it to run electric chillers and make chilled water, which you store to meet the chilling load at 5, 6, 7 o'clock, than it is to use batteries. And somebody ought to be looking at that.
Yeah, we have a project in Davis that's doing just that. It's an apartment, a new apartment building. Actually, Sierra, that might be an interesting webinar because the project is really well thought through from an energy efficiency and cost and a user cost perspective. It's a very very much of a cutting edge project.
No, I agree with you. That would be certainly worth a discussion about that.
This is Sherry again from Wisconsin, just always from this unfortunate perspective, but what we find in our state is that the PSC has made it such that people who generate their own solar get such a low buyback rate from the utilities that they're sizing their systems to only generate the amount of load they need, or maybe even half the load they need. So how does that work in terms of sizing systems so that you do have excess power to sell? Are you finding a trend in how people size their systems based on the deregulation and the blockchain possibilities? Do you think that that's going to, you know, push the markets in a different way as well?
I don't think there's enough of it out there to be pushing the market yet, but I think it definitely will. Net, just in the way that net metering has, where there are high prices for return of power, that has driven those markets incredibly. And so if you get an alternative that gets the same result, it's likely to do the same thing.
This is Jim with Microgrid. I don't know if I can answer what the future might hold for that, but I mean, consider this. At this point, we wield power around the grid, you know, pretty readily. I mean, albeit the transmission sometimes isn't that great, but, you know, what's to stop you from building a much larger solar farm at a much lower solar cost and making it in a nearby state somewhere else and you taking that power in multiple places? I mean, I guess crossing multiple states. So I think there's a lot that can be done at some point on the regulatory side, which could really greatly affect how much absorption of solar starts to happen. And it doesn't necessarily have to mean you're going to put extra solar on your rooftop. If that's the case, you may not even have it on your roof anymore at that point, because it's cheaper to just own a part of a solar system that's on the ground, you know, that kind of thing. So, which still could be community based, but because you're getting to scale so much faster that you're able to do that, and you could also do that with a bigger battery at the same time. So there's all kinds of schemes I think that could come, but I think it's early days. I think to Baird's point, I think there's a lot of directions, and it's all happening all at the same time.
Thank you.
This is Ron Larson. Can I jump in?
Sure, Ron.
I'm in Colorado, my first time on a call. My interest in this subject relates to carbon negativity. So I heard that solar systems, which are carbon neutral, could have a special place. Is there any reason that blockchain approaches could help those who are trying to push carbon negativity?
No, there's no reason at all. I mentioned earlier people who are working to make carbon neutrality purchases, be a sort of a one-click add-on to a point of sale, electronic point of sale. But where you have, for example, an energy efficiency tier in a renewable energy standard, which a few states have, and you're working to a passive house standard, and you're actually, you know, coming out net negative. If it's net negative in the sense of electricity export, it's really exactly what we've been talking about. And if it's registering credits and making it efficient to register credits at small scales, why not?
I have one question. Mark, would you give us a quick update on what's going on in Illinois as far as CCA is concerned? Mark, you there? Okay. All right. Yeah, Mark's the reason he's part of this organization is because he's involved with CCAs over in Illinois. So I guess he just left. Okay. So anyhow, we have a couple of minutes left. Do we have any more questions? No? Okay.
Go ahead. This is Roger again. I've been looking at some international projects as well as U.S. projects, and I recall one British startup that is actually using blockchain to reward people who cut their consumption. And so I don't have details on it, but I think they're somehow creating tokens that then go to those consumers sort of in a shared savings model that are actually cutting their usage. So that could bear on moving towards carbon negative strategies, I think.
Okay, any comments? All right. Okay, so we'll wrap it up. just so that you know, we have another conference call coming up on the 28th of November, which is dealing issues with developing microgrids under and or community solar on brownfields would be the discussion. Oh, that's interesting. My screen just disappeared. Okay. And Linda Shaw, Jean, you'll be part of that panel, I think, is what we said. And Shalom Flank and Cleaner Rob will be a part of that panel. And also, Samuel Golding will be talking about updates in community choice aggregation on Thursday, November 30th. So I hope to see you all there. Thanks so much to Barrett, Roger, and Jean for participating in the panel today. A really interesting discussion. Obviously something that we'll be talking about in the future again. And thanks for everybody else for coming.
Thanks, Sierra.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you very much, Sierra. Have a great day.
Bye now.
Thank you.